Hi, this is 180 Degrees, a show about the changes we all need to make for a clean energy future. Brought to you by SEAI. Episode 4, Sustainable Business.
Today we're talking all things business, and the question is, are businesses doing enough to tackle climate change? Hello everyone, Tom Halpin here. Talking to us today about this is Ali Sheridan, sustainability leader at IKEA, Irish Times journalist Mark Hilliard, Bernadette Phelan, Head of Advisory Services at the Business in the Community Ireland, and Fergus Sharkey, Head of Business and Public Sector. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Tom.
So, Ali, just to tee things up, before we get into the business end of things, can you tell us a little bit about how you first got involved in sustainability and your passion for it?
Yeah, I'm probably one of those cliche people who say, you know, I was always into nature and things when I'm younger. But I should disclose, when I was picking my college course, I very much wanted to go down the business route. That's where I thought I'd be. But having spent a few months in DCU, it just really wasn't for me at the time. And actually gave me a chance to take a few months out and really look at what I wanted to do. And I found a course in environmental management, and that really set me on the path to where I am now. So that was a good while ago at this stage. But from there, I went to work in the NGO sector, and very quickly realised that there's a huge amount of work to do in industry on this. So I jumped into industry about 5 years after leaving college, went back to do a master's, and then have worked with the likes of Borbia and now IKEA. So somewhat of a targeted path, but definitely hasn't been a straight one.
Yeah. And what does your role in IKEA call for?
Yeah, so I lead the sustainability agenda for IKEA here in Ireland. So what that really means day to day is delivering on our sustainability strategy here in Ireland. So that's around looking at our supply chain, looking at the store and the buildings that we operate, working with our co-workers to build competence, and probably the most exciting area and what I'm really enjoying at the moment is expanding now to the customer and understanding how we can work with them around sustainable living, how can they help us in terms of our sustainability goals, and then really moving towards effectively changing our business towards a circular business model. So challenging but very exciting times.
I'm sure it is very exciting. And Mark, you've written, you know, about various subjects, but in the business area, there's organisations and companies that are involved in supplying the solutions, and there's those that are benefiting from the solutions and services. Where do you think the business world is today with regards sustainability and sustainable energy?
Yeah, well, I think as you pointed out there are two sides to it. There's the existing business world that has to adapt and meet the challenges, and that's becoming fairly much an all-consuming reality at the moment for all manner of businesses. And then there's the emerging businesses that are taking the opportunity to be the suppliers of solutions. So I think on the one hand, you have the existing businesses, whether you're at SME level, trying to grapple with the challenges. I think your survey pointed out the difficulties there. You have larger companies and industry who are in a much stronger position to do that because they have the money. And then on the supply side, you have sort of emerging technology and how that feeds into business, and a lot of consultancy companies and monitoring companies that are able to assist along the way. So there are opportunities and challenges depending on what sort of business you're looking at.
I think we'll be coming back to that later. And Bernadette, you are the Head of Advisory Services with Business in the Community Ireland, as I said. What is Business in the Community Ireland, and what do you do for your members?
Business in the Community were established nearly 20 years ago, and our mission is to work with larger businesses to help them become more sustainable and responsible. And that's always been our core mission. But over the 20 years, what CSR or sustainability actually looks like has changed. So now, at this moment in time, when we talk about sustainability, it's very much centred in terms of being a strategic issue within the business. It's a boardroom issue in terms of looking at the risks that businesses are facing, exactly like you're talking about, Mark, availing of the opportunities as well as the risk management piece. But 20 years ago, and I still think a lot of people think about CSR, and it still remains a heart of it, is about the community engagement piece. So it's about having good social relations, being a good neighbour, having a good social licence to operate. IKEA would be a good neighbour out in Ballymun. So the agenda and business in the community, we've gone from talking about the social licence to operate, community engagement, to the energy management, to it now being a governance issue and an ethics issue, and really coming into the heart and DNA of the business.
Great. And I think we're going to probe that a little bit further about how this agenda has changed over the last two decades, let's say. And Fergus, you head the business and public sector team at SEAI. What sort of priorities are you focusing on at present?
Well, I suppose the business and public sector team in SEAI serves a cohort of business public sector, from very large public bodies down to the smallest school, SMEs and large industries. So all business users, and we would tailor our services depending on where they are, I guess, not to use a cliche, but in their journey on decarbonisation and reducing their energy consumption. In the public sector, some of that's guided by targets, and it's fairly well enshrined in policy, and there's a bit of pressure on public bodies to achieve those targets. In large industry, there's a very big CSR pull to do these things. And in the SME sector, it's more just about engagement. It's about getting this up from the bottom of the agenda to somewhere near the top of the agenda, because at the moment it sits under Brexit and can I pay my staff, and where, you know, what about this person that hasn't paid me in 6 months? All of those pressing problems that keep business owners awake at night. And down at the bottom, maybe wrapped in terms of I'm spending too much on energy, is this issue. And trying to get that up at the agenda is the core sort of piece for the smaller business sector.
And I want to go to a piece of audio from this year's Energy Show. But just before we do, I think three of you mentioned the word CSR. And I'm going to, there's an acronym ban on the podcast. So that's the first point. But I want one of you to volunteer to explain CSR and then the rest of you not to use the term.
This is the landmine of sustainability.
Grenades aplenty here at this show.
CSR stands for Corporate Social Responsibility. And it would be a term that's about 20 years old, evolving from the practices of large businesses in terms of how they can be more responsible for the impacts that they have on their community, on their employees, their suppliers, their customers, and the environment. So CSR is an acronym that's about how are you understanding the impacts your business has in doing its daily business. Okay. So I'll stop using CSR as well.
No, just for the purpose of the podcast, we might have a CSR type swear box.
An acronym swear jar.
Swear jar. And we just can we have clinking acronym noises, Connor, every time?
Yeah.
So now we'll go to an audio clip, which is from a Vox Pop style audio clip that we did at the Energy Show this year, where we asked visitors if they thought that businesses are doing what's needed to help tackle climate change. And here's a little bit of what they said.
Some of it is PR, but there are certainly people who are genuinely interested in it. But I think too that a lot of rebranding of the whole concept of sustainability and, you know, good for the environment has to be done, because some people regard it as a bit crusty still. And I think it needs to be a reality, not an optional extra.
Like companies are only looking for profit, and they're not looking at, you know, the rest of the planet or anything like that. And if you look at any organisation, there's very, very few companies who genuinely care for the environment or put the environment first. It's always profit first. It doesn't matter how much energy they use, or that they leave that to somebody else to take care of. And that's the responsibility of our government, to make sure that they provide non-fossil fuel energy for our businesses.
Absolutely. You know, we've got the agriculture problem, we have the carbon emissions with the animals, we have the carbon problems with the diesel cars, there's so many opportunities, and we're like hamsters on a wheel. We're making no progress. We're making no progress. It's very exasperating, it really is.
With the private sector, it is driven by profit. And there are huge cost savings to be achieved through various ISO standards, through education, through transformation, cultural change within business. But the private sector seems focused on more PR and not on the hard truth, which is we're not achieving our targets at the moment.
The problem isn't Ireland. The problem is China. And the problem is America. Now, you know, we are tacking into the wind, basically, until China and America turn the supertankers around. Now, we can be as good as we want, but we're a blip on the radar. But we are a positive blip, and we can take moral authority and send a moral message, you know, to the world in this space by leading by example.
Just for the listeners' benefit, there was a lot of grimacing, wincing, smirking to some of the answers that were given there. So businesses are all profit-driven and don't care. Is that a fair assessment? Ali, I'm going to ask you, because you're in business, so you probably want to answer from an IKEA standpoint, but you've also been in the NGO and the board BS side of the house, so they're all profit-driven, don't care.
Look, it's a view a lot of people have, but it comes back to the real belief I have that businesses have such an impact on so many parts, whether that's supply chain, whether that's daily life as customers. And yes, they have, at the moment, currently ways of working, an obligation to turn profit to keep that going. There's such a huge opportunity to use their business for good and for positive. And that's something which we're starting to see. But we are only starting to see that, and we are coming from a very low level. So when we heard some of the viewpoints there in terms of, you know, we're not doing enough, it's a PR exercise. Absolutely, that's where we're at, you know. And in terms of IKEA, you know, we're obviously trying to push beyond that. We're looking at the entire supply chain. We're moving to that circular model because we know that our business as it exists today and has existed the last 75 years won't exist in the future. It has no place because, one, raw materials and supply chains, our customers are changing in terms of their knowledge and expectation of companies. And then even the model that we have, even how people are changing how they live, they're renting more, they're in smaller spaces. None of it makes sense to continue as business as usual. So it's for our survival to change and to keep the business going. But with that, given our size and given our sale, we absolutely have a responsibility to keep our game high in sustainability and to hopefully bring others with us. So, I think we have, as an industry, as sectors, there's a huge amount to work on. We're starting to wake up to it, but there's massive opportunities to be taken there.
And Bernard, another observation that was made was business don't have the money, and that was a common reason before. Is it still true, like across your membership, is money to change a serious consideration or a serious challenge?
I'll frame the answer in terms of, if you're making a decision and you're thinking about it in terms of a 3-month block of time versus a 3-year block of time versus what will happen in 10 years time. So I think, and again, I know it's very true in terms of energy investment. If you're looking for a rate of return and you're using your normal rules of evaluation and return on investment, some of the technologies don't stack up if you're looking at them in 1 or 2 years time. But flip that and think longer term. And if you think in 5 years time, where will my business be? 10 years time, where will my business be? Then it actually stacks up. So the challenge is, and big business is doing this, getting out of the quarter to quarter mindset. That short-termism, I think, is one of the real blocks. So in terms of saying money is a barrier, it's only a barrier if you're applying the conventional rules of how you quantify that investment. And the other real sign of hope, because I've been in the sustainability space for nearly 20 years, and it's back to this profit piece, is investors are really engaging in this. They were the last stakeholder to come to the table. But you've BlackRock Investment, one of the largest investors on the planet. You've Moody's, Standard & Poor's. They're all doing work in this space. And there's really good evidence coming out of, like, you know, Harvard-based studies that investors are actually really worried about this because there's so many unaccounted for risks. And you also see the likes of the Japanese pension fund, the Norwegian pension fund. They're completely changing where they're investing. So back to this idea of there being a huge polarity between being a sustainable business and being a profitable business, I would say that that's wrong. There's a tension between them, but they're not opposite. Mm. I think what has to change is it's about what are the rules of the end game? What do you value? Mm.
So Fergus, furious nodding by you there gets your time on the mic. So what resonated with you there? You know, why do you think it is that money isn't the sole reason for now?
I wouldn't say, yeah, so money is definitely not the sole reason. I suppose what resonated with me there is if you just look at a single technology investment and just look at a payback, effectively, you're doing it wrong. The organizations that are leading in this regard are taking a much more holistic approach to this. So there's an end game in sight. And then everything becomes in the context of that end game. So if a business says, I want to put solar PV on my roof, and that's a 6-year payback, and actually, you know, I need to employ a few new people, and that's going to be my priority, and it's always going to win out. However, if an organization has commitment right from the top, and they're saying, we are going to reduce our carbon emissions by X, by Y, or we are going to be fully decarbonized by a certain period, then that decision becomes in some way self-fulfilling. We have to do this because otherwise it's not going to bring us on the right trajectory. So it just depends how a company is approaching it. If they do approach it measure by measure, there's a good chance it'll slip through the cracks. If they approach it in a very structured way in the context of a whole plan, is a really good chance it's going to happen. So it does depend on the context of an organization. Now, of course, small businesses don't think like that because mm-hmm. they don't have sustainability managers. They don't have engineering teams. They don't have anybody. They have one person who's the accountant, goes and gets some milk in the morning. They've several people who effectively service every function in the company. So really, at the moment, it's about getting their attention.
Mm-hmm. Can I also say, yeah. sorry, Tom, if you don't mind me interjecting on the future of business, I think the question is often framed the wrong way as well. I mean, businesses are out to make money and it is about the bottom line, but that is and always has been the nature of business, and we shouldn't see that as a bad thing. I think it's a question of evolution, and I think it's a PR issue. And I think companies, the savvy companies, and again, we're talking about the larger corporate end because, you know, as you mentioned, SMEs are a different beast. But I think we're in an era of increasing pressure, not only from customers and customer-facing businesses. We're looking at a shift in consumer behavior, and we're looking at a shift in emphasis on what employees are looking for mm-hmm. from the companies that they work for. And as anyone around this table will tell you, particularly in Ireland and particularly in the tech sector, we're in a talent war. Yeah. And one of the many strings to the bow that companies can now do to attract talent, particularly from the millennial generation, is to say we are a green company, we are a sustainable company, and we're changing our models. So just this idea, I think, that one of your contributors, with due respect to him, said in the Vox Pop, is that, you know, companies are only about making money. Well, companies are about making money, but if they are savvy enough, they will understand that to continue making money into the future, this is an issue that they have to take head on. And aggressive investment is the way forward.
Yeah. I think, if you don't mind me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, having worked in this space a long time as well, the pace at which this is ramping up is awe-inspiring to see. Yeah. But companies, their reaction just has to ramp up rapidly, you know. And even the whole way we think about sustainability, if we've ever read about or studied, all of us will have heard of, you know, the people, planet, profit, equal approach. That's already old thinking, you know. The man who coined that, John Elkington, has taken it back and said that is the wrong approach. You cannot give equal focus to people, planet, profit, because without planet you have neither of the other two, you know. And we know that now, the science there, you cannot ignore that. And it's about survival, you know. And it's so much that about the talent piece and the internal activation, you know, these corporate activists now that we're seeing popping up, and I'm loving it everywhere. Just yesterday, a media company in the UK, over 100 employees, demanded that the company stops taking advertisements from fossil fuel companies, you know, and they're willing to walk mm-hmm. on that. Equally, Futura, you know, a communications company in the UK, again, have started a creative conscious campaign, I think, where, again, as an industry, they're signing up to not working with fossil fuel industries and carbon intensive industries because they understand they have a role in promoting that and can actually use their influence for good. So that kind of bravery and leadership and willingness to put your head above the parapet as an industry is yeah. amazing to watch at the moment.
And I think the Edelman Trust Barometer, the one for 2019, one of the stats out of that was 75% of those surveyed expect CEOs to have a view yeah. on sustainability issues. Because mm-hmm. I would believe, and I see it in the companies that we would work with, there is an acceptance, and we would work with a broad range of large multinationals and indigenous. The why is there. The boardroom actually get it. I actually think we're in a how problem. I think there's knowing what works, the skills and expertise, people understanding. And that is progress. Yeah. You know, I think people know what the end game is because it's in the media every day in terms of what's happening with the planet and climate change and social instability. I think where we actually need to come together, and businesses are really focused on this, is the solutions. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a real hunger and appetite mm-hmm. for how we do it. And again, we're in the lucky position of working with companies that want to get better. And I suppose when we're working with them, it is about not... The old school was businesses always had to be perfect mm. and you have to have this perfect solution to every situation and you can have no faults. But sustainability is a journey. And I think it's about it being okay that you're not perfect in everything, but you're really progressive in one or two areas. You've got a really strong, you know, idea of continuous improvement in another. And I think that has to become okay as well for business, because this is difficult.
Yeah.
We're turning. I really liked the existing businesses. It's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
You're turning tankards. These are huge organizational entities that you have to nudge in a very different direction.
And it's uncomfortable, right? Because as a business, you know, for the first time ever, you have to work with your competitors and collaborate around supply chains. And that's not a natural place for business.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look for those longer 6-year, 7-year repayments. And that's, again, not comfortable for business. Yeah. So everyone here, there is a level of bravery and unknowingness, but just a willingness to go with it and explore, because that's where we're at.
One of the other points made on the audio was, and I say this firmly with my tongue firmly in cheek, and that is, sure, it all doesn't matter because we're small compared to China, and the behemoth that is China always gets bad mouthed, you know. So who wants to pick up the cudgel and defend China or put us down?
I don't think it's about defending China, sorry.
Someone has to defend China.
Yeah.
I think it's this idea that, you know, we shouldn't bother because we're a tadpole in the argument, moves the debate into the political realm.
Mm.
And I think Ireland is very small, but then we're part of an EU response. And even at that level, the EU response is very small. But we do have, you know, a global position on this in terms of the Paris Agreement. And I think, you know, we all believe, I think it's very unfortunate that the US pulled out of that. But I think it would play very much into Donald Trump's hands if we had countries saying, well, sure, we're not going to make any difference. Mm. So, you know, let's pull out. I think we have to lead by example. And I think, again, much like the company investment, the countries that lead by example and make the investments will be the winners, I think, in the long
term. There's also a lot of benefits for this. If we use less energy and more of our energy is coming from indigenous renewable sources, we're going to be in a better place as a country.
Mm.
We're going to have cleaner air, going to have better fuel security. You know, we're going to have cleaner businesses with lower bills who can become more competitive. So let's not kind of lose sight of the, you know, if the science is wrong, let's just say that the 0.1% of scientists are, you know, the crack team from the oil companies are the right ones who are going to come out and tell us all we've been completely wrong. We're still going to end up in a really nice place. It's something as a society to strive for, not staying in the status quo. We've never done that before. We would never argue that, you know, we've already got a lower murder rate than China, so let's do nothing about it. Or we've already got less road accidents than China, let's not do anything about it. The other thing is we do use more energy per capita than China.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is China are doing a huge amount in renewable energy, in electric vehicles. They're seeing the writing on the wall, whether that's they're also building massive coal stations and so on to provide insatiable demand, some of which comes from Europeans, which have effectively outsourced manufacturing into Asia and China.
Mm.
So there are globalization impacts at play in China's growing energy consumption and growing emissions as well, that effectively are going to come home to roost at some point, and we have to be accountable ourselves as businesses and citizens of that.
And as far as I know, I think China are doing an awful lot in the space of electric buses and transport, which is something we have not been able to get on top of in this country. And they're also in the built environment, we see these huge mega cities that they're building, and there's an awful lot of sustainability there as well. So I think we have a Western bias towards China, and an awful lot of it is absolutely correct, but they are pushing in certain directions. And again, to be fair to the United States, you have state governments and the corporate sector who are, you know, pushing back against Donald Trump's agenda and innovating as well. So it's not simply good enough to say compare ourselves on a block standard and do nothing about it, because I don't think that is a reflection of the nuance.
And that's a really nice way of characterizing it, that, you know, cities and states are able to book against the Trump administration and their federal decision to go against the Paris Agreement. So that's really nice. We mentioned the dreaded CSR, chink, money and swear jar, earlier.
You also used the word PR. You have to put another.
That's the second one. But I'm going to come to that subject specifically, which is that CSR 15, 20 years ago had another moniker, which was greenwashing, right? I'm fairly confident that we're beyond greenwashing for the most part, but Fergus frantically shaking his head, Bernadette nodding. There's a fight on here now. So what was greenwashing, or what is greenwashing, and why, how does it come about?
Greenwashing is where it's all about putting a very, I suppose, a marketing spin on what you're doing. What part of us for greenwashing would be what we would call the checkbook CSR. So it's about big business going around with handing out checks and
building
money. And it doesn't have any relationship to their business. Mm-hmm. So, and one of the pieces, actually, I would say for us within the network, and the recession was really tough, and obviously we would have lost a lot of our corporate members, but it was actually really good for sustainability, because for companies that were greenwashing, and it was this standalone, slightly cynical, we'll just put a nice veneer on things, all of that went, because the money wasn't there to throw at it. So actually for us, coming out of the recession, the conversation changed with a lot of our businesses. And in a really positive way, it brought sustainability back on the table in a far more genuine piece. And in hindsight, it was actually quite progressive for the CSR agenda. I would say greenwashing is always a risk within this space. The Sustainable Development Goals are there by the UN, and there's a lot of talk about how both government and businesses are going to impact on them. You could be very cynical and say businesses can just take the lovely, there's lovely little icons, and you can say we stick on the icons on a report and that covers us. But people being consumers and employees can see through that. People are far more educated, far more savvy. And I think the greenwashing piece through social media, through technology, that's high risk behaviour if you're a corporate. That's really high risk. And, you know, if you lose your reputation, it's so hard to get it back. So I think corporates realise that that is something, even if you're pulled into the sustainability agenda, that path is not for you.
I think the historical context of greenwashing is very important as well, because it's something that I'd looked into in the past, and it's actually a very interesting and colourful thing if it can be consigned to history. As I'm sure a lot of us here know, it was kind of coined in the 1980s, and it was something that was very much attached to the traditional concerns about sort of the big corporate polluters, the chemical companies and the oil companies. And as you mentioned, it was very much kind of expressing itself in PR and marketing. It became known as greenwashing, but it's just marketing, and that's all it was. And I think to see that trickle down into companies in the modern context, as you were saying, it doesn't really work. It doesn't really translate. So where greenwashing will exist, it will be probably an opportunistic reflection of a genuine effort, I think, in making some changes.
I don't know. I think we still suffer from the halo effect, you know, with where you might be a massive textile, clothing, fast fashion company, and 5% of your jeans are now organic, and suddenly that's enough, you know, and that's where the PR. But again, customers are cutting through that fluffy sustainability like never before. Like Sarah put out a really ambitious industry changing goal that by 2025, all of their clothing and textiles is going to be from sustainable materials. And you would think that would have had a really positive reception, but actually the more difficult questions came, but it's still questioning the model. Can we still put out that much clothes at that pace? And do we need to go more circular? And do we need to think about as customers? So the level of dialogue and the awareness of customers and other stakeholders is really putting CSR to bed. And there's a whole, not to jump on the term, but there is a whole thinking now. CSR is dead, effectively. You know, it's all around sustainability and changing your business model, essentially, because there's just no place for it anymore. And it's a risk now to be too fluffy with your CSR, because the backlash is going to happen.
Yeah. And does it at all come back then that you actually have to redouble your efforts to communicate your genuine efforts on what you're actually doing? Because now there's a cynicism there. So if you're actually doing something, people might misinterpret it as
totally
lightweight.
It's tough, right? Because for me anyway, sustainability should never sit in marketing or comms. They should absolutely support on it, but it shouldn't be sat. That's not their role is to help tell the story of the work being done from the rest of the industry. But at the same time, you know, sexy sustainability isn't 30% emission reductions by 2030. That's just not something you're going to talk to your family about, you know. So there has to be a balance, and storytelling is becoming such an important part of that, and it is amazing to see what's happening. But for that to happen and that to be picked up at and bought into from consumers and others, it has to be genuine, and the work has to be done, and you can't put the cart before the horse anymore. And then equally around the reports, it has to be the good, the bad and the ugly. can't just be we're great at this, you know, because nobody has nailed this.
And bringing you in, Fergus, at a large organisation level, so large business or large public bodies, reporting is a fundamental component of that transparency. And that is proving successful in showing the stars and the underperformers as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you're getting rid of the hiding spaces, and again, you know, as Bernadette touched on, it depends on how credible that analysis is done, who it's done by, to what standard, to et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of things. And, you know, when you get into that, I can tell you that when you get into reporting on carbon emissions and when you get into reporting on energy, there are a lot of hiding spaces. There are a lot of accountancy tricks you can do to make things look, well, that data center actually is outsourced, so that's not our energy consumption. Yeah. That. So you have to be very, very tight to be credible. And that's in the large space. I think, and in the large space, the hiding spaces are going. I mean, the example I saw recently was an airline made a big fanfare about no more plastics on their flights and just got panned. And that's and rightly so, because it's in the context of your overall impact on the environment. Yeah, plastics are extremely important, but they're burning millions of tons of kerosene every year and, you know, creating millions of tons of CO2. So on the larger visible businesses, that's having an effect. I think where greenwashing, maybe greenwashing isn't the right term, but in the smaller business space, smaller public bodies, the issue is they don't know what things are credible or not. Mm-hmm. They don't really know if I put a PV system on my roof, is that making a big step in the right direction, yeah, or is that making a tiny step, yeah, or is it doing anything? Mm. I mean, if you're a cement company and you put PV in your head office, yeah, it looks great, but you're burning tons of tires and all, yeah, sorts of reclaimed waste, mm, to create your product. So that's where people are maybe getting a bit lost. You know, they're being offered things from the market that are maybe being perceived from a low knowledge, an old position of knowledge, as having a bigger impact than they really are. Mm. And people do something, they make the wrong decisions, or they make a decision and kind of think, well, that's that box ticked.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, which is where that structure and continuous, yeah, improvement
there's,
is really
there's
important.
There's no better example of that than the cups, coffee cups, you know, yeah, and the whole movement on that, and how every coffee shop has jumped onto alternatives, yeah, but not understanding how they're meant to be used and disposed of, and communicating on that. And actually,
I don't understand.
See, and this is, you know, and there's so much nuances in there, but trying to do the right thing, yeah, but not, yeah, having the skills to do that. And it's a massively emerging issue, is the sustainability skills gap.
Yeah.
Like, we still have teaching economy, yeah, without, yeah, planetary limits. We're still teaching mechanics without electric vehicle knowledge, you know, and that's all going to catch up with us. Yes. And it has to be everyone, yeah, especially, yeah, in the SME sector.
And it creates those gaps in the future where people are effectively, there's a stop in momentum. They get engaged on an issue and say, yeah, I'm going to clean up my business. And then they start opening web pages and books and they go, oh my God, this is complex.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, so it, yeah, it can become a barrier
and
in
that
itself.
And that actually kind of brings me back to your point about, particularly within larger businesses, sometimes the small things do matter. Sometimes getting the solar panels on the roof of the head office is like, for the sustainability team or the people pushing, yeah, it, okay, that's a win. We now have gotten people's attention. So if it's just a standalone project, then yeah, that's not what you want. But if you've got a group of real champions within the business who are fighting a bigger battle, and that's one of their milestones, mm, then it does matter.
Correct.
So it's, again, it's the context, yeah, within which it sits. And I think sometimes when you're outside business looking in or reading about them in the media, it can be easy to be cynical about, mm, this as well. And, you know, that business is not doing enough. Business sometimes are chipping away and fighting their own internal dynamics of trying to get something. So I think if you know a business has a wider strategic view of what they're doing, if you know through various ways they're in it for the long game, then, you know, I would be, you know, softer in terms of, okay, getting rid of plastics is a good thing, or getting, so yeah, it's the context.
And I'm sure there are people in that airline who would turn around and say, well, actually, we have a plan to get to the most efficient aircraft by this date,
yeah,
start using, mm, biofuels, yeah, by this date. We're trying out electrification, yeah, of small airplanes over, mm, here. But when that came out as a, yeah, fanfare thing,
yeah,
it was how it was pitched against,
yeah, yeah,
what is perceived as a big polluter.
That's a yeah, perception issue as well, though. And the media has a big role to play in this, because a lot of the time the message can be boiled down too simplistically.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned that it's not sexy to talk about carbon reductions. People don't know how you measure carbon, yeah. how you reduce carbon. People don't know what carbon is. It brings us back to secondary school chemistry lessons, mm-hmm. you know. But if I write a story about a, you know, well-known supermarket trying to get rid of plastic off their shelves, it resonates with people. And yet, it, you know, it doesn't touch upon the fact that you're shipping or flying in kiwis from, you know, the other side of the world. So in terms of companies, and again, particularly we go back to smaller companies, trying to change their behavior and doing it in a substantial and responsible way, you do have to take into consideration the perceptions of what the big issues are, as opposed to what the average man in the street will see as change. And there has to be a balance.
And Mark, you touched on a point there. I was actually going to pick it up from what Bernadette said. Do the media have an absolute responsibility in this regard? Mm. And I'm going to challenge you. Are the media living up to that responsibility in bringing people on board, unearthing the good practice, unearthing the bad practice, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same argument that you can apply to the media on any subject, you know. The media has historically been challenged, you know, for its coverage of politics, for example. You know, we get obsessed with personality politics and elections, but you will have no end of politicians who want to raise sort of more minor subjects. And then so we're into this debate about where do you focus your attention? So there is absolutely a media responsibility in trying to have a more holistic, I hate the term, but a broader look at these issues. And then you're into a different area of conversation where do we have the media's going through incredible flux at the moment? Do we have the resources to get into proper investigative journalism to hold people to account? And going back again to like the CO2 emissions debate, you know, do readers, do media consumers have an interest in that? And so how does that affect editorial decisions? And all of these things are quite rightly there to be debated. And I would imagine that there is an interest in the media, but how that translates into coverage and consumption of that coverage is the same debate that's always been there for all topics.
There's been a step change in, I mean, since I've been involved in, I was involved in the power generation industry for a long time and burned coal for electricity at one point in my career. And but for about a decade, the entire conversation about, if you want to call it just decarbonisation as generally, was focused on electricity. And actually, it's only been the last 3 or 4 years that it feels to me like the man on the street, society has woken up to, oh, actually, that's just one small part of it. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, a couple of million cows over here, which are a bit of a head scratcher, how we're going to sort that. And we have business using heat and electricity. And what about our homes and our vehicles? And suddenly a lot more is coming home to roost. And, you know, unfortunately, given, you know, the refrain at the moment that we have 12 years left to sort this out, that societal shift takes time. We don't have a lot of time. Mm. So we need to, all of us as stakeholders in this, need to do more than nudging is not going to work anymore. So there needs to be a little bit of shock doctrine, but don't vilify business.
That's
the key. Like the businesses are run by people, and the reason a lot of businesses are concerned about profit or money generally is because they want to pay their staff. They're concerned about their staff's security. They're concerned about growing their business so they can employ more people. There's, you know, you've got your odd Machiavellian person sitting up smoking a cigar and drinking brandy in their castle, but it's a rarity. Business is us. Yeah. Business is our society.
Yeah.
And we have to just put that in context, that society needs to change at an individual level, and businesses will come.
Now, we're in the last few minutes. We might even be into extra time at this stage. But I want to just bring it back down to ground, because hopefully the listeners out there are businesses, small, medium and large, who are interested in this space and want to do something about it. So who wants to kick off a segment on where should a business start, or where can a business start? And if you want to differentiate, I know we don't want dichotomies, but if you want to differentiate between, you know, smaller operators and larger operators, they are different because of their capacity. So where should you start?
For me, it's starting where you're at as a company, right? And understanding what is your purpose as a company, and going back to your business plan. This isn't something that just needs to be a separate project, separate people involved. This needs to be something that's integrated throughout the company, big and small. So understanding what you're doing, where you're having the biggest negative or positive impact in terms of environment sustainability, and starting from there. Because again, coming back to CSR and sustainability, it's gotten so wide of a scope now. It encompasses everything, and you can't, as a company, have a meaningful impact on everything. You need to understand where your biggest impact can be and focus there. So for me, it's respecting what you are as a business and building sustainability into it.
Definitely, you need to know what matters to my business, what's important. But my second piece of advice within that is talk to other businesses. And it's back to this idea of, I think there's a skills gap, there's a knowledge gap within this. And I think businesses need to start sharing different solutions with each other. So really start talking to others, use your network, and good plagiarism is always good. Yeah.
It's research. I think if you credited, it's research. Fergus, what would you say?
It's horses for courses, depends on the business. I think it's a good point to say start where you start, but I always use the phrase start small and think big, which is, it actually doesn't matter if your first action is, actually, we're going to unplug that at the weekend when we're not here. If that's your first action, yeah, you can say we've moved well beyond that in terms of what we need to do. But that's an important action. But the think big piece is actually say to yourself, you know, what does our business look like if it's, you know, if it's a clean business? Does it use renewable heating? Does it use a surplus or generate our own surplus of renewable electricity? What does that look like? Create an end state and then start chipping away at it, but with an end state in mind. Now, for an SME, that's very, very difficult. But fundamentally, and it kills me because I see it all the time, every single business, public sector body and large industry is wasting energy today. Every single one. So start with what you're wasting. It's sinful, almost, mm-hmm. the amount of stuff that is wasted. And that doesn't have to cost anything.
Yeah.
And if it does cost something, it will cost very little.
And Mark, do you think business is capable of turning the juggernaut that was referred to?
I do. I think it's capable of playing its part. But I think there are two very distinctive arguments. I think the large corporates will be okay. They have the wherewithal and the finances to look after themselves. And importantly, they will be the ones who suffer the most from government sticks and from public perception. I think the real problem is with the SMEs. They use about half of the energy in the commercial sector in Ireland.
And growing.
They don't have the time and they don't have the money to invest in the means to kind of tackle these issues, and they need more supports. Obviously, you guys are doing a lot in that space, but also that there are a lot of questions around the built fabric, and you know, should they invest when they're not the owners of the buildings? There are a lot of big sort of tangible questions that need to be addressed. But I think that's the biggest challenge is the SME sector.
So don't forget, you can find out lots more information about what businesses and public bodies can do from the SEAI website at www.seai.ie. My thanks to our wonderful guests, Sally Sheridan, Mark Hilliard, Bernard Phelan and Fergus Sharkey. Until next time, goodbye.
Since recording this episode, Ali Sheridan took up a new role as Director at Sustainability Works.
180 Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. Join us next time when we'll be talking about social and tech trends for the future of Ireland. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, and there's more at seai.ie/podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and use the hashtag SEAI Podcast.